Hello and welcome to Helium Talk, das Kunstgespräch. My name is Jörg Heikhaus. I founded the gallery Helium Cowboy in Hamburg many, many years ago, and I also work as an artist under the name of Alex Diamond. My guest today is the Danish artist Rune Christensen. Rune has been showing his art with us here at Helium Cowboy since 2016. In May 2017, we presented his first solo exhibition, Textured, and he's a very dear artist to us here at Helium Cowboy since. Not only do we value Rune's artwork, but also his taste in art and his understanding of new contemporary positions and the vision of modern art today. That is why we joined forces, and together with gallery manager Melvin, the three of us selected a great bunch of artists to present in a group exhibition we called CRISP. Artists that share this vision with us and who we believe are taking art onto a new level, like Angela Fox, Jordi Kerwick, Peter Berg, Jay Olé, David Schillinglaw, Samuel Bassett, Will Barris, Jens Rausch, Ben Venom, Fabian Wolf, Julian Dice, Winnie Truong, Rasmus Rinhack, and yes, some new pieces by Rune and me also found their way into this show. Coming from a background in graffiti, Rune Christensen developed a very unique and distinct style and color code for his figurative paintings and drawings. His main inspiration roots in his extensive traveling to remote corners of the world, and you can see this in the often traditional textures and layers he applies and translates into his own visual urban language. We talk about this and about settling down a bit now with a baby on its way to enrich his life, and tell many stories from the art world he encountered along the way to becoming an internationally recognized and popular artist. You will hear us address a Julia sometimes during the show, and you can probably hear the click of a camera shutter. That is because the wonderful Julia Schwendner from This Is Julia Photography graced us here on the ranch with her presence to document this podcast with her camera. Happy listening, and as always, I'm looking forward to your feedback. Where are you staying, by the way?
St. Pauli somewhere.
It's in a hotel somewhere in St. Pauli?
Yeah.
Hotel Austria. Lost there?
The cheapest one I could find.
Yeah? Hotel Ock.
It's pretty cheap. It's like 59 euros for two people.
All right. You can rent it by the hour too, probably.
Yeah, it was 20 euros for an hour.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
Did they look weirdly at you? Or
The bed's really like... seems like it has a weird hole in the middle, kind of like somebody's been pushing it a lot. I'm really sure.
Rhythmically.
It's right next to the Reeperbahn. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, Rune, welcome to our podcast. It's another little bit different one because we're not alone today. We have the wonderful Julia here taking photos. So sometimes it may click. And you are here because we are opening an exhibition together. You're an artist that has shown with us, and now we're opening an exhibition together. And we haven't hung any of the works yet, but we looked at them. Are you happy with what arrived so far?
I'm super happy with what arrived. I think that it's nice that we were able to both get our kind of interests and styles and friends and colleagues into this, and I think everyone created some really good work so far, what I've seen. So yeah, I'm very pumped about it.
So I remember when the last time when we spoke here, when we did the exhibition, we had some laughs about the title curator. And
yeah, we sure did, didn't we?
And now you're a curator.
No, I'm just a co-curator.
Co-curator.
Yeah.
Well, we're all co-curators. Three co-curators in one pot.
No, I definitely put that on my resume for sure. My wife is right now making a couple of t-shirts at home. Curated t-shirts for me to wear when I get back. So finally, I made it. I made it into the big leagues.
Is that something that you were always interested in when you started doing art? Like also being interested in working with other artists and showing other artists? And
I think that I like working with people in general. I like community. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what this show is kind of sort of a little bit about as well. It's about community for me as well, like where you and I, when we met, we developed a friendship. First, we met in kind of similar professional way, and we developed a friendship. And I think that some of the artists that are here are friends and are potential friends and are potential people that I would hopefully, and you and I will hopefully continue working with. So I see it, of course, as like, yeah, I always wanted to work with art. I always worked with art, essentially. But I like this idea of community. I think that that's maybe for me a big part of it is It's kind of, if you could call it helping, is wrong to say, but like kind of like being a movement together somehow, maybe.
Yeah, not just like the lone wolf. The lone wolf.
Because it very, very fast in the art world, I think it can very fast become a very egocentric thing where it's each man to their own or each girl to their own. And I think as a commune of some kind, that you will stand stronger, and you will also, maybe if you're on the floor, somebody will pick you up, or the other way around. I don't know. Yeah, kind of what I'm thinking right now, I guess, anyways.
Well, art can be a pretty lonely profession because you're working a lot in the studio on your own. And
exactly.
Yeah, I'm also pretty happy with the selection of the artists that we have. I also think has a lot to do with friendship, but also the styles work very good together.
Yeah.
And basically, putting together a show like this does not, you know, this doesn't have really a theme. We call it Crisp because I think that was just a name that popped up.
Yeah, yeah. Which is a fine name because I feel like all the art is pretty crisp.
Yeah, yeah. So, how did we meet again? We met 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think first time I met you, I think we were talking a few times on the internet.
Yeah.
And I think you showed up at my first solo show.
I sent you a t-shirt. I remember.
You sent me a t-shirt. You sent me a t-shirt, which I love, which I still have, and I actually brought it, and I might be wearing it for the show. Who knows? Right. That was the first time we were having a conversation on the internet, and you came with your son to Denmark for mm-hmm. my first solo show there, and then Rasmus Fischer curated the show with you here called mm-hmm. Mist of Madness,
yep.
and that's kind of sort of when. I showed here with you before Mist of Madness. You did something. We invited me and the artist J.O., which is also showing here this time. And we were part of some group show that you did, maybe with Affenfaust, or I can't really remember what that was.
No, we did a show here.
It was a fair, maybe, or something.
No, that was after the exhibition.
That whatever.
Was after your solo show. No, before, I mean, I think...
Yeah, after the solo show, but before Mist of Madness, right?
Yeah, before Mist of Madness.
Yeah, we did that show where you had J-Bo and yeah.
But I mean, that's... why I was mentioning this, how we met, is... Because I think it's a part of the theme of this show as well. It's... I remember driving up to...
Aalborg.
To Aalborg. Well, I'll learn at some point.
Yeah.
To see your solo show.
Yeah. There.
And then we all got together in the cars the next morning, slightly hungover.
Yeah, for sure.
And drove up to Skagen, to the northern
Skagen.
End of Skagen.
Skagen.
Skagen. Hey, okay. Yeah, nobody says that.
Yeah.
There's actually a beer coming out called Skagen. Well, it's called Skagen because it comes from Hamburg and everybody pours Skagen.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we nice drove up to eat too. Fish.
We did. With John Todd was there
John
too,
Todd
and his
and
wife.
Rasmus and
my wife, your son.
Yeah.
Rasmus, yeah.
So, and I think that's where you sometimes lay a foundation for, you know, so that is probably stronger or more interesting than just going by Instagram likes and fame of artists, you know.
100%.
Yeah.
And I think that will last longer as well.
Yeah.
When each give a little, you know, like you driving from Hamburg with Melvin for, I guess that's 5 hours. That's a pretty, for European, that's a long drive. Fairly long drive.
Yeah.
But so that I feel like that's something you're giving something. Like, and that's also that feeling of when we were all in the sun eating our ice creams, being hungover at the tip of the Denmark. That was a very nice feeling of community, which is, again, going back to what we talked about, is essentially what this is kind of also about.
And that was also your first solo exhibition ever? Or
no, it was my first solo exhibition with Volsen.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was my first really big one where I had like 25 pieces. Yeah.
And it was sold out.
It was sold out on the opening, which was very nice.
Nice feeling, yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed that very, very much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rasmus.
he's a good guy. He's a good man.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have him on the podcast later, too.
Yeah, I know. He told me on Friday. He talked about it.
Recording the next one.
Yeah, nice.
With him, it's a nice angle that he has towards art, you know?
Like 100%.
Very, very strong sales focus, but also very close to... I think he also can only sell art that he really, really likes and believes in.
I think so too.
Also the main reason why you should sell art. But
anyway. Not everyone does.
So, and that's, let's get to your career. That's that was probably the most important exhibition at that date for you. And what was before? How do you come? How did you become an artist?
How did I become an artist? It's a good question. I painted graffiti for many years, which I guess is essentially a style of some kind of expression, maybe not art. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's art. That's always the discussion, isn't it? Actually, with one of the artists I was showing here, we grew up painting graffiti together, Peter Bierk, mm-hmm. which is, that's, again, community, like, so nice bringing him here to Hamburg and to Helium Cowboy. And I guess then I quit graffiti because I don't know why I did that, but then I started painting on canvas a couple of years later, and then slowly and steady moved into, I found a gallery that wanted to show a bit of my work, and at the time I was traveling quite a lot, so I was lucky. I produced a bunch of artwork, had a show with I think 12 pieces with a good gallery in Denmark, and I went to Nepal and I went into the mountains and I was hiking in the mountains in the Himalayas for 3 weeks. I came out of the mountains and the gallerist had written an email to me that she sold 10 of my paintings and she's going to send me some money. So she sent me a bunch of Danish nice crowners to Nepal, and when you have Danish money in Nepal, you are doing well. So I thought, this is pretty great. Like, I'll try and do some more drawings and send home. And then I was kind of sort of, I guess, for 5 or 6 years, a traveling artist, like living a little bit in Denmark, working a little bit, going out and sending works to my gallery. And in that way, and then I came back and I did a fair with the gallery.
When was that?
It was Art Herning, it's called.
No,
it's
when was that?
Oh, this was in 2000 and... When was that? That's a good question. So I've been 4 years, so maybe 4 years ago or something? 4 or 5 years? 5 years ago? What would that be? 13? 13?
5 years ago.
Yeah, 13, yeah. 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. I was with a gallery, and which was a smaller gallery that I'm with now than compared to you guys and to Volsen, which I'm represented by. But they took me to this art fair in Denmark, which is called Art Herning, which is all the Danish galleries. And that's where I met Rasmus, which is we talked about before. And he asked me if I wanted to show with him, and I was like, yep, because that was one of the galleries that I really, really liked at the time. And I thought that was a big step up for me. So I did a group show with him, had 5 pieces in a group show, and he sold all the pieces. So that was, again, super nice. What a really great start for me. And then he asked me if I wanted to do a solo show with him. And then I did... the gallery is huge, so you often do 2-man or 3-man show because it still had 25 pieces.
Big place, yeah.
Yeah, John Todd had 15 pieces and J.O. had 19 pieces, and it was still, it's a huge space. So, yeah, so that was, I guess that was, and that's where I met you, and then all that kicked off. And then I've been lucky enough to do a lot of shows in America, and I've even shown in Beirut and Kazakhstan.
But how did that come that American galleries were interested in showing your work? I mean, how did they find you?
I think that's through Instagram, essentially. And I think that maybe, I think I was maybe the second, if you can call it waves on Instagram. I was probably the second wave on Instagram. And I was lucky enough to be picked up by Juxtapose magazine that shared some of my work in an article.
Okay, yeah. That's,
and then that guy, what's he called? The real Swiss Beats.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Again, shared one of my photos on his Instagram profile, and then in America,
he's got like what, 15 million followers,
something like that. And he's married to Alicia Keys, and then Americans love this kind of stuff. So if the rich are doing and the famous are doing something, then everybody wants to do it. So I guess that I was lucky enough that he shared the work. And then I was picked up by a really awesome guy called Joseph Gross. Gross, or I'm not really sure how to pronounce that.
He had a gallery in New York.
Yeah, he had a Joseph Gross gallery in New York. And he used to work for Juxtapose, actually. He picked me up and I did 2 group shows with him, and I did Scope New York with him. And then from there, I think his stamp of approval, because he was... At the time, he was representing Eric Jones and like some pretty heavy hitters like Giannis and some good names in that kind of urban, new, contemporary kind of style. So I think his stamp of approval was very important to me. And I think after that, I got picked up by, I did a solo show with 5024 San Francisco. I've just been approached by a lot of...
That's the gallery of Jeremy Fish and a lot
yeah,
of him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think he's part owner. I think actually they closed down the gallery now, sadly. They still have the platform Upper Playground, mm-hmm. but I think they closed down the gallery. But yeah, just then I've been lucky enough to keep being approached. I just did a show with a gallery called Cast Contemporary in Tampa Bay, and they approached me again to do something else next year or the next year again. I can't really remember.
Okay.
And then I think it's again like with community is, you know, like kind of sort of like this awesome guy called Alex Giannis, who's from Miami. He does woodwork, very, very nice.
I know what he does.
Yeah, very nice.
I know what he does not do yeah, very yeah. well.
Yeah, you also know that, yeah.
Reply to emails.
Yes. I think that was part of why Joseph also picked me up. And also, if you look at it, like Jordi Kervik that we has in this show, I met him in Copenhagen. He mm-hmm. was curating or whatever, a huge group show, which he put me in. And... then we just did a show with Volson. Now I'm doing a show with him here, where I kind of invited him. And then he invited me to part of doing a show in Melbourne. So I think this is the thing. It's like, you could look at it as like each man scratch each other's backs or whatever. I don't know really what you call it. But I just look at it as like it's community. It's like you become a group of artists that are friends. And you're trying, if you have the possibility of being like, hey, man, I have a show. Let's try to do something together. And the quality is there, of course. And the gallery is interested. I think that's a strong, strong way of being together.
But it's also a Shark Tank, right? The whole art.
It is. World. It is. Oh. It is. So you need a group of sharks that have more pointy teeth than the next people.
That's why I only hang out with
people like you with tattoos that play basketball and stuff
and share their meals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, but I think that's. I mean, you mentioned a few things. Juxtapose. Swiss Beats, Instagram. I think on Instagram, it only works when you have these kind of people promoting your work.
Mm.
You know, then you get basically seen. I mean, we're doing this with the Helium Kawa Instagram account. We're doing this all the time. We're promoting mm-hmm. other artists all mm-hmm. the time.
Mm-hmm.
But even though we're a well-known and probably, you know, recognized gallery, we don't have the reach of like the husband of Alicia Keys, who's also like a very important.
Now he's become a famous art collector and curator or whatever.
So I think the social media only works when you're at that level, but it's still difficult to use that. Do you because I always, you know, I think on every podcast we come to the point of Instagram and I tend to move over that point quickly because it's just something we have to do.
Yeah.
But you are, how old are you again?
37.
37. So, mm-hmm. From my perspective, a very young person.
Oh, yeah. I consider myself
really, how old are you?
35.
35. Whew. Oh,
baby.
All babies here. You know, I'm talking to babies. but that's kind of your daily routine, right? You get up and think about Instagram, or you think what you're going to do there in the next week, or...
I think at a point I used it a lot, and I was very like, when should I post? What should I write? All this stuff. Because I kind of thought that you could somehow understand it. Which I think you can't. Somehow. Maybe. I think I came to the conclusion that like I don't understand it. But I think it's an important thing to use for several reasons. I think it's good to put your work out there. It's like fishing. If you don't have a hook in, you'll never catch a fish.
Yeah, okay.
Essentially. That's how I look at it now. But I also think it's like, it's nice. It can become very, it's a good community. Mm-hmm. It's a good way to meet other artists. I met Jordi again, mm-hmm. essentially through Instagram.
Yeah.
But I also do think that
Samuel Bassett is in the show because I found him on Instagram.
Exactly. There's a lot of that stuff. Same with Angela Fox. Like mm-hmm. I also saw her work through Instagram. I was like, holy crap, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, but I also think it's like, it's a nice way. Like you have this like new Instagram stories. And I really enjoy seeing other artists' stories when they invite me into their studios, their little process photos and stuff. I like seeing, of course, the finished image of an artwork. But I like more seeing the works in progress almost, like the little studio setups or the little videos that people make and stuff. So I think it becomes, somehow it the artwork becomes personal. The artists invite you in.
So without being a social media consultant,
I'm not, but
you would recommend rather, I mean, to I don't know, younger artists or artists that get their work out there, that they be more spontaneous and not just show the polished work, but go, you know, like show the process. And
I like seeing that.
Because the stories, for me, the stories are really, I don't do many stories.
No.
Because it's just like...
No, but that's each person to their own. I think it's like, it can be whatever you want it to be. But the one thing it shouldn't be is being frustrating. If it becomes, if Instagram or any social media becomes a problem for you, you get annoyed because other people are doing better than you, or you get annoyed because you have to do it, then don't do it. Mm. You should just essentially, like, if you're trying to live off art, you shouldn't do anything you don't want to do, mm-hmm. because then you should just go get a job, like kind of sort of almost, you know, like I just try and do 99.9% of what I want to do. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that as soon as it becomes too much, just put it aside for some time and then pull.
Yeah, I like that approach. I mean, yeah. I think I know a lot of artists and people really who just added another stress level to their lives through social media.
Yeah, you know?
And I understand that it's sometimes frustrating. I'm personally never frustrated with other people having more followers than others. No. I think it's just, you know, that's.
But I've heard that story from other people. Maybe not so much the followers, but like, and followers, like that doesn't, that's, you know, like I know artists that have 50,000 followers that's never gotten anything out of it. But if you have the right people following, that's what you want. I essentially don't really care if there's 20,000 people on your, when you get thousands of likes on things. But if you have the right people looking at your artwork, that's what you want. It's essentially just like a gallery. It's like, it doesn't matter to have a gallery where you have 5,000 visitors if they're all just drinking and standing with their back to the artwork.
Yeah.
But if you have 50 people that came, that wanted to see the work, that appreciated the work, that were talking to you, that was conversing about what's going on here,
mm-hmm.
and had a following. Like, I know I've met collectors through you that keep coming back and that writes me still. It's like, oh, blah, 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 blah. Like, that's nice. It doesn't matter if you just have a bunch of hip young people standing, mm-hmm. drinking wine and then leaving. Like,
well, I have a few collectors that they never like anything or they never comment on anything, but when they see something they like, they send me an email.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, I saw that work you're working on. That's great. You know, when can I have a preview? And it's like, I don't even know that you're following me. So, but that's of course nice. But I also have collectors who would never in their whole life consider going on Facebook or Instagram to look at anything.
But that's also, I think you should just look at Instagram or Facebook or whatever social media you're using to promote your business or artwork. Mm-hmm. Just look at it as another tool in your toolbox. It's like, you don't have to use the hammer all the time, but it's nice to have it around if you need it.
Yeah.
I think that's how I look at it. Like, it's just there.
Yeah.
Kind of, sort of.
All right, I think that was enough promotion for Instagram, right?
Yeah. Well,
they don't need promotion.
They owe us some money.
No, but I mean, it has just become part of, it's just the toolbox. It's a very good term. I think for artists, nobody actually teaches you how to live your life as an artist.
No.
You just, at some point, you decide that this is very important to you. Some people cannot do anything else. Other people have the privilege of choosing at some point to go that way.
Yes.
But nobody can tell you how to do that. There's no handbook for being an artist. And even if there are definitely handbooks for artists, but they're bullshit.
Yeah.
Just
waste of money.
Yeah, And so this is just one part out of the box. I'm always trying to figure out how, for me, it's very, you know, one of the reasons I'm very curious to see how people actually get their works to be seen.
Yeah.
And get their works, you know, sort of get people to be interested enough to buy a piece. Because as soon as people buy an artwork, they take a share in the development of the artist.
Yes.
Because I mean, it's like, we don't have a regular income. We don't go to work from 9 to 5 or whatever hours, and at the end of the month, you know, we get a check in the mail or anything. We just have, we're dependent upon, and the artists that I'm working with, everybody's depending upon the sales. So mm-hmm. even though that should not, you know, sort of be a driver as an artist, it is something that will always be part of your daily life as an artist. So there may be 3 months where you make no money, and then maybe you sold out exhibition at a gallery, which helps you probably get through the next 3 months, half a year, depending on how well you sell. And so finding out how people actually find an artist to follow, being interested in artists, getting basically, when I started Helium Cowboy, there was a, I didn't know that when we started it, but there was a boom on the art market. So the first time we went to Miami, I mean, basically 75-80% of what we took to Miami stayed in Miami or elsewhere in the world.
So you thought this was pretty easy.
So that was pretty easy. But in the last years, selling art has become much more complicated. So that you always have to find out, and also being, you know, sort of also getting people to not just come for the beer.
Yes.
But also to come be interested in purchasing from an artist, because, you know, so that is where a connection begins.
Yes.
That is very valuable to an artist. You know, people that like your work and they buy the first one, and even though if they don't never buy another one, if they love your work, they will always talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So and Instagram, I always think Instagram is more the part where you find other artists and people that like your work. But I've also seen it, you know, sort of in the last, I don't know, year or, you know, 1.5 years, that more and more people who are interested in buying art, you know, get on Instagram. But they're not, it's not a prototype, there's no prototype for a buyer. Do you have, you know, coming from urban art, graffiti, do you have a certain type of people that collect your work?
No, I don't think I do.
So how did they come across your work? I mean, I know that, you know, we invite people and show your work, and then they like it.
Clearly, the galleries are promoting my work. You're promoting my work in Hamburg and Rasmus in Denmark, and the art fairs. But I think for me, like when it comes to collectors that are approaching me from outside Europe or Denmark, especially in America, I think it has been through Instagram and through these magazines like High Fructose or Juxtapose that I've been, again, lucky enough to been writing about me a few times. But yeah, like how the hell does it work? I don't think anybody knows. And I think if you really knew, you could write a book and become a millionaire. I think that that's the trickiest part. And it's also, when it really, really, really sadly, when it comes to art, it's also for me the most boring part, but I also know it's a necessary part. So it's like, yeah, like, I wish that, I bet you wish the same, that when you do big shows or whatever, that the finances were already over. So on the opening, people would just come and like converse about the art and talk about the art and embrace it and touch it and high five and oh. But sadly, there's also a business. So we need to make money. And how do you do that? I have absolutely no idea. That's why I have a gallerist. but yeah, I think I like, not that long ago, I was approached by a collector in Chicago, and he bought a couple of works. And I'm like, okay, like how the hell did he find me? I have no idea. Like, I have no idea who he is. I just got an address.
But I have the feeling that the Danish art market, I mean, that the Danish people are more accustomed or used to buying art and living with art than many other people. I mean, we've mentioned Denmark and the United States, and yes, the United States are still the strongest market.
Yeah, that's just way more people.
You know? Yeah, it's more people, but also a different approach to art. It's always been, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But Denmark, that's what I experienced in Denmark, going to exhibitions and, you know, sort of working with Galerie Wolfson together, is that people come and they're still fascinated.
Yeah.
And then when they're fascinated, they also buy.
Yeah, and I think that I've sold, I think some of my favorite pieces to sell is to people that are students.
Mm-hmm.
That have saved money for a little drawing out of their SU that you get in Denmark. And it's like they spent 800 euros on a piece, and they get, maybe their monthly check is 800 euros. So it's like, we saved for 3 months for this show. We bought this little drawing, and they're so pumped. That's an awesome thing to do. And I think that's the thing. It's like, people in Denmark of all finances and all ages buy art.
Why is that?
Yeah, why is that? That's a really good question. Maybe it's because, maybe it's, maybe it's because the way we live in our houses, it's all white and mm-hmm. and straight lines and surfaces. So if you don't have anything on the, like if you go into a Danish house, they'll never have their house walls painted anything but white. Mm-hmm. So essentially, it already looks almost like a gallery. So if you don't put any colors on the wall, you're living in a dental cleaning office or something.
Design is very strong in Denmark.
Yeah, like, it is. And people grow up with understanding that that's something that we appreciate. And, mm-hmm. And I think actually, like, there was a big print movement in the early 2000, 2005, 6, where a lot of artists were doing doodle drawings and making prints and selling them for, like, I don't know, 20, 30 euros. So I remember buying them myself, going to this like art fair where they were all sitting with the little tables and selling their prints, and you could get a print for whatever. And I thought it was so exciting. And I think maybe that was a good push, actually, you know, like people starting acknowledging that, oh, it was so nice buying this piece. And then they got their education, they got their job, and they're like, oh, now I'm ready to buy an original. I have no idea why people buy that much art in Denmark.
I'll check with Cosmos. Maybe he knows. Maybe more about this,
I think he has the.
At least he has probably has an idea.
He definitely 100% will have an idea, or at least an opinion.
Yeah, but then again, he brought you to Kazakhstan and to Beirut. So
he's always trying, which I also like, and I like. He's always trying to push, you know, like see, like, oh, how far can we take it? Where can we take it to? And I think that's also. I also think we talked about this before. Having white walls and cold white wine and just opening up your doors and thinking that that's enough, I think the time has passed.
Yeah, that's over.
Yeah. And I think you see it at the art fairs too. There's so many art fairs. Mm-hmm. It just can't keep continuing. Like, you can't keep. How many art fairs do you have in Art Miami? Like 25 art fairs?
Yeah, probably.
With 10,000 pieces in each art fair? Mm-hmm. Like, it can't keep being a success.
Yeah, just as
somehow, I think.
Yeah, and I wondered it myself. I mean, I have ideas about it. I've been running a gallery for over 15 years now. So, of course,
but you're doing something new with this.
Yeah, but I personally think that there will always be a very clean way to run a gallery. There's a model to do this gallery, and there's 100%. Always people that you can attract to this, mm-hmm. And you have a few people with money as your clients, then you may survive. But I think that as art itself, you always have to rethink the whole process
and
the work. I mean,
and try and think money out of it, essentially. Because if you think about the sales and the money, what are you doing? Like, that's not what an artist should do anyways.
No, I mean, and basically that can be bad for an artist to think too much about it. I think then as an artist, you have worries and you need to kind of make money, of course, that's all true, but it will probably not be very beneficial for your work itself.
No, I don't think so.
But, you know, let's get to your work, you know, maybe let's get away from the whole market thing. But I mean, it's
part of it.
It's part of it. I mean, what did you say, 37, you're getting a child now, so you kind of need money, you know.
Yeah,
so
I need baby money soon.
You need baby money.
Yeah.
You live in one of the most expensive cities of the world.
Yeah.
Copenhagen.
Yeah.
Your wife needs luxury clothes. No, she doesn't.
No, but diamond rings.
But everything else, you know, sort of is like, it's... You know, it's tough to get through. But, you know, so that's just like the struggle you've entered when you became an artist. But you became an artist with you didn't become an artist with the distinct style, but you developed this very distinct style in the last solo exhibition that we did, and also the work that you showed in Wolfson in 2015.
Yeah.
Is very different from what other people show. You know, like, you have a motive and you work very hard on bringing this idea or this basis into many, many paintings.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like today I paint a house, tomorrow I paint a boat, then I paint a baby, then I paint this.
No.
And where do you think that comes from? And what drives you, or drove you to the point where you started to create work like this and use these elements like the pots and...
Yeah, that's a good question, because how do you describe why you're doing something that just comes natural? I don't really know, but I know that I painted a certain way before I went traveling, and then I went out, saw a bunch of stuff, and came back and somehow developed this style that I've been doing. And I think it comes from traveling, essentially. It comes from seeing people and seeing patterns and seeing the world in colors. Somehow like that drove me to paint, at least in the palette and the style that I'm doing. I'm painting what I'm interested in. I'm painting tattoos, I'm painting colors which I like from graffiti and from the traveling that I've done. So in that perspective, it's that. And then I like narratives, I like storytelling. Mm-hmm. So I think that all my paintings have a lot of stories in them. And how it became that, I often ask myself, why the hell? But it's like Bob Dylan sounds like Bob Dylan sounds, kind of, sort of. And Basquiat painted how Basquiat painted. And I think that that's like, if something comes natural to you. Now I started doing still living paintings, mm-hmm. and they still look like my paintings, which is now they're just a bunch of shapes coming out of a pot. But the
pot was there before.
Yeah. So the pot was there before. That kind of came in. Why did that come in? I don't really know. Like, things just...
What's the pot? The last series that you made, it was empty, but there were like hundreds.
Empty pots, they were essentially about... Like, they were called still life. The paintings were called still life. And they were the idea of what a still life painting was. It's you set something up and you set this perfect imagery up. You put, you know, like the bowl of fruit and the plant, and you paint it like the old masters did. And then I thought about, like, oh, like, isn't that what we're doing now with, again, social media, is that we're creating our own life as a still life or still living imagery. Mm-hmm. It's like you take the perfect photo of your perfect plate or your perfect baby or your perfect husband or wife or perfect life, and you put this out on Instagram or on Facebook to show the world like how perfect things are, when essentially it's not always that perfect. So these often masked women that are sitting in this, like the big painting that I had here with, like, I don't know, 100 empty pots around them, are maybe trying to control all the situations in their life, putting them around, but because they're so focused on all these perfect things that they're placing, nothing is growing in the pots. Mm-hmm. Nothing grew, nothing came out of it, because they were trying maybe too hard to create something. Maybe the pot's also possibilities of something that could potentially grow, and you just need to take one up and choose it. Because often you also see a woman sitting, or two women, or three women, or whatever. Often it's women. I use my wife as a model, it's easier. She's not so lumpy as me. So you see a person sitting with a pot that something is growing in, and the rest is empty. So it's maybe that choice, like, just choose something. And maybe I'm talking to myself in them, because I have such a hard time myself in choosing. Choose one thing, for crying out loud. Just do one thing, instead of trying to do too many things. So maybe that's what they're about. I'm not always 100% sure what they're about.
The outside perspective, my perspective, following your work for some time. The pots came in when we kind of met before. You also had like the towns and
townships
and stuff like that. And then
they were inspired by Nepali towns, by the way.
The what?
Nepali, like, yeah. I've seen them in the mountains.
Yeah, like
in
the Himalaya. Like the colors that you use in.
Yeah.
The colorfulness.
Yeah.
All those things. But now when I first saw you making these still lives with flowers, which are not flowers, but, you know, sort of abstract shapes coming out of the pots, I thought, okay, now he's starting to fill the pots.
Yeah.
It's probably the obvious thing, but does that have something to do with changes in your life, or is that a struggle to find something new? Is there a point where you say, okay, I've done enough of this, I need to change this now?
I think I went through a little bit of a dark period at a point where the things definitely were less colorful. Mm-hmm. I had a very colorful period of my life where I was traveling a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's when everything was all the, like, very vibrant colors. And then all of a sudden I realized, and I see back on now, it got darker and darker. And I think it was maybe from this, like, going back into society, having to move to a city, live there, being on family unification as we are in Denmark, because my wife is from another part of the world. And then
Canada,
yeah, but still in Denmark, it's the same. If you're from Canada or from Afghanistan, it's the same deal. Okay. And then I guess like I needed to do something new, and I was talking to some friends, and I felt like I was like, oh, I need to do something new. What am I going to do? And actually, again, Jordy Kervik, which is part of this show as well, I was talking to him online, and he gave me a challenge. He's like, try and do a still living or a still life painting. And I'm like, huh, like me do a flower bouquet? I'm like, I can't paint a flower bouquet. So I started by doing plants that look similar to plants, but it's like, this is boring. I don't like looking at things and trying to reproduce in my style of what they are. And now I ended up with this, I'm showing three paintings at the show that are still livings, and they're essentially just, if you kind of think about it, they're just kind of graffiti shapes coming out of a pot, kind of, sort of. Which I think, yeah, it's like, it feels very much like me in them somehow.
I still need some time with them. I like them. I like the direction you're taking. I also, you know, on the, I'm also in a way happy that you kind of, you know, move on in a way, but I also see the struggle, you know, that we all have when we change things. Mm. But I think for something that you've just started is also already pretty far advanced.
Mm, I think so.
But I still have to get my head around the shapes and what's it about, because I like shapes, you know. I think it's very important. A lot of in my work, shapes play an important role, but I couldn't explain them either. You know, it's just like they're there, and it's also for me. It's, you know, so this is another nice aspect doing this show now, and showing these works for the first time. There will be people that know your work, and they come here and they say, "Ah, okay," and then we kind of get some feedback, you know, and see where this goes. But I think with, if you put this next to any of your other work, it's like it's a Rune Christensen. It's,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
There's no doubt about it. No, you
know. I think that's where I'm trying to go to. It's like trying to. It also be if I did a painting that looked very similar to the painting I just showed here at the solo show, it'd be like, oh, we just seen that. Good for you. So I think it's trying to.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a lot of artists who basically have repetition in their style.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, so for sure. And I'm not. I don't think I'm gonna go away from what I was doing. But I think it's just trying somehow to keep developing styles. Like, if I like the shows where you go and you can see a person that played with many different materials, many different imageries, many different, what do you call it? Like I like to see paper, sculpture, collage, paintings, you know, like, I think the next thing I'm going to try and paint is horses. I'm going to try and see, can I paint a horse that looks like, that has leopard spots? I don't know. Like, just trying, like, I've been looking at a lot of like old battle scenes from like paintings from the 1600s. And I'm like, how can I do that, but with what I do without looking at it somehow?
But your inspiration, of course, in the beginning is very strongly the traveling, but your inspiration comes from, I mean, like when you think about horses now, where does that come from? What do you think?
Maybe I just bought a small garden house in my hometown called Horsens, which is essentially an old military town, and the logo is a horse. So maybe it's because I looked at the logo, I'm like, maybe I need to do some horses.
Yeah, well, when we talk outside art, we talk about football and we talk about, you know, those things. And
not so many horses.
I'm
married to a woman from the prairies in Canada, I see horses, wild horses. I don't know, like, I think it's just like after doing this, I'm like, I felt like I found my style in these paintings. I keep developing them, of course, and nowhere near done. I only made a few of them, and I only showed a few. So I think, you know, like, it's like, oh, if I can do that, then I can try and paint something else. Mm-hmm. Because I painted people for so long, or women especially, you know. So I think it's just trying to do something new.
But are you kind of nervous when you show these works? I mean, before an opening, before an exhibition?
I haven't been to an opening where they've been shown. So, in general,
I mean, when you do exhibitions.
Of course.
Feel nervous?
Of course, like group shows, I think it's kind of is it a different way, because you can kind of hide in between everyone, and the group show can still be a success if you weren't a success, and it doesn't feel as hard. But if you do a big solo show where you work for 3 to 6 months, you put a lot of time and energy and emotions into it, and it's a trip, you know, like you go through so many, like it's your whole life. You put this part of your life into this for so long. And then if it's being received badly or poorly, That must be hard. Like I've been lucky enough that I haven't really tried that. Most of the shows that I've had have been received well, and I feel like you always like sales wise is whatever. But I think when you connect with someone at a show, mm-hmm. like just this one connection, like this one person that's just like, this is awesome. I'm super stoked to see this and meet you and whatever. Like that's what I think drives you to the next one. Clearly, you need the money too, so you can, which we talked about before.
Yeah, I don't,
but I think that for me, the connection with somebody, that you connected with somebody through your art, is the most important for me.
Yeah, I have. I'm always excited for exhibitions, of course, before if it's my own or all the ones that I where I show other artists.
Yeah.
But it's not so much nervous. What I have is I have an opening hangover, if you want to say that, and not from alcohol, but like the next morning after an exhibition,
depression.
I wake up usually really early, and it feels like a come down, you know.
Yeah.
And then
what
then,
now?
Yeah. What now? What happened now? Yesterday?
Yeah.
Was everything good yesterday? Yeah. I don't know.
Did they like it?
Yeah. Did they like it,
or were they just pretending?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, sort of after the, you know, sort of after the opening, you know, it's always, you know, you climb a little bit downhill, and you have to kind of climb out of it again.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I was just curious whether you have the same feeling.
No, 100%, because I did, when I did the show here at Helium Cowboy last May, that was my third solo show in 3 countries in 12 months. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when the dark times hit me. Like, I had definitely 5 or 6 months where I was like not 100% happy, ruined Christmas, and that's for damn sure. And I think that was essentially just coming down from like show after show after show after show, and traveling, you know, going to San Francisco, mm-hmm. going to Miami, going to New York, going to Hamburg, like everything was just flying. And then you're like, all of a sudden you're just like, what now? Like, definitely not another solo show. Like, I definitely not do another solo show. That was 100% sure. I was just worn out. And it took like 6 months to kind of like get over that. And I think that was essentially what you're describing as just like, oh God, like,
come on.
Yeah, like a really long one. But it was also like 3 pretty intense years leading up to that show, you know, like, and just for me, like ticking off, like, I remember seeing you the first time at Art Copenhagen some years back when you were showing Victor Castello and Alex Diamond and a couple of other, and I was like, oh, and that's also when I seen Volsen. I wasn't showing with any of you guys at that time. I was like, these galleries are awesome. This is where I want to go. And I remember talking to my wife about it. It was like showing her different galleries, like, and pointing out Helium Cowboy and Volsen. I was like, this is where I want to go. And then 2 years later, I have solo shows with both of you guys. And I even have a solo show in San Francisco with one of my favorite galleries there that have made some amazing artists. And it's just like, it's how do you continue from there? Like, that's a tough, I think, for any artist. It's like, everybody I talk to is like, after big shows, people crash. And they either don't go to the studio, or they go to the studio and just look around, pick their noses and go home. I think that's pretty common.
So what was picking you up then after this? Your wife, or is it your work, or?
I think conversations with friends and other artists, just that support and trying to, I don't know, like, I think it was like really through, through these paintings that I did, these Stillleben paintings, that was kind of like, just kind of loosening up, being like, ah, oh, this is fun. I started playing with different materials. Yeah, somehow, I don't really know what that was. Maybe having a baby. Maybe that changed my perspectives a little bit. I'm not really sure.
It will.
Yeah, it will.
It 14, will change your life. And
2 weeks.
Yeah.
2 weeks.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing. You know, I think it's important that you have things in your life that change your perspective.
But I think
it doesn't always have to be a baby or something dramatic.
No. Be a good football game or a burger and a beer, a good friend, a hug, something like
almost,
that. But
almost relegating and then
but
not.
But I also, exactly, something like that. But I also do think, though, that like just having galleries, for example, like when we talk about professional relationships that actually believe in you, that are like, you know, like, even though you're in a hard time, I still have good conversations with you. I have really good conversations with Rasmus as well. And it's like, oh, like, everything will be good. Just keep doing what you're doing. And you know, like, you're still there. Like, it's not like, just because I didn't produce a ton of work in 6 months, you're still there. And I'm like, oh, they're still there. Oh, that's nice. That feels safe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think that's one part a gallery can provide, but it has probably always been difficult. But because of the business angle of the whole thing, it's not always easy to combine the both, because galleries very often, of course, have to let loose a little bit more once the grand opening is over and the show's over, because there's other artists that need the same attention.
Yes, and that's a hard one to acknowledge for an artist as well, being like, oh, I was the center of attention for 3 months, you know, leading up to the show. Mm-hmm. Then I was the super center of attention at the opening.
Yeah.
Then I was kind of the attention for 2 weeks. And then I drifted out and I'm kind of gone for maybe. No one's really calling me. Mm-hmm. What's going on? And that's when I think that's where you need to be strong and either have good colleagues and friends or something. But that's something you got to go through all the time as an artist. And then I think that that's the...
Yeah, well, you're lucky to have galleries. You know how many artists go through their careers and all they get is group shows or smaller exhibitions, you know. And but I don't know. It's a life that you basically choose.
Yes.
And you work with so many different people, and every gallery works differently, and every artist has a different understanding as well. It brings together very, very big egos as well. Everybody's like, you know, sort of has a very strong opinion usually.
Yeah.
And that includes like the third party, the collectors.
Yeah.
It's like three big egos that you kind of have to combine, because all of, you know, sort of, I think an artist has not necessarily be an alpha or anything, but has to have a strong feeling about themselves. It can be a very depressed feeling as well, but your work is, in a way, no matter how strong it is and how strong you build it, you know, my work is probably very masculine because it's work and, you know, tools and saws and noise involved in them. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the rest and everything behind it isn't super fragile, you know. And and I think that's a balance that as an artist you kind of have to find, you know. And I think it can take very long. I mean, I'm doing this for a bunch of years longer than you do, but that's why I ask about, you know, like the anxiety after exhibitions and stuff like that. I also think I'd miss this if it would be just like, I'll just did an exhibition, it's great, what's next? You know, I think it's very important to question yourself after these things, because other people may not, you know, they just think, oh, it's great. You know, you just cannot get distracted from less likes on social media, or that a gallerist doesn't, you know, probably care for you for a couple of weeks, or that that you don't get the support that you usually get, or that people stop buying for some time. You know, that can also always happen. Yeah, I'm curious to see where your career will lead you, because I've seen like a very strong side, but I think that you are in a mid-career level where there's still so much potential.
Yeah, I hope so.
And to grow, you know. For you, maybe it's like, you know, the struggle and hard. What's next? Now work on this. But
yeah,
and I'm super sure that your baby is gonna change you so much. But then, of course, you also get a strong opinion when you have a child, and I like that. If for example, I, you know, with my two children, they both have a very strong opinion about what I do. And of course, it's probably easier to understand for them if I would be a controller for, I don't know, a car manufacturer. It would be, and you know, they wouldn't even know what I'm doing my day. And here they have an idea what I'm doing, but they're also like very, very important feedback. You know, they cannot change what I'm doing, but they can influence my own opinion on things.
Yeah, bet.
So, yeah, so, and this, I mean, your baby still needs some time to grow, but then, you know, it will add something.
Probably, hopefully. Sure. I hope so, I hope so, yeah, and I'm definitely excited about that.
So, and you now you've moved back to Horsens in your little summer house for the baby period, or?
Yeah, just for the summer, and then try and check it out and see, like, if it's something to move back to a smaller town or go back to Copenhagen. I still have my apartment and my studio there. Which is a subletted. So just try and check that out and see if that's something. But it's just a nice, unique opportunity, because the house provides a studio space. which is fine size for the summer, and you can paint outside, and it's just a nice subtle place to have a kid, I guess, and be outside all the time.
And is Copenhagen a good place for art? Is that?
Yeah, I guess, like, there's lots of galleries. I don't really work with any there, so it's kind of an odd place to move to Copenhagen and then don't work with a gallery there. I showed there a few times with galleries, but I haven't really found something that fitted. But I think there's a lot of galleries. There's a lot of inspiration there, I would say. You know, like, you can go around, there's good museums, lots of galleries where you can see what's going on. But the scene there is a little bit different than the scene that I'm part of, if you can say that. It's a different kind of art scene. In the mid-level of galleries, if you could call it that, like, I would say it has a little bit more of a right now, minimalism and that kind of minimalistic abstraction, mm-hmm. that I would, if you were to talk about a time, I would say like the 70s in New York, that style of painting is very popular right now, which is very far from what I'm doing. So I guess that, and then just a lot of the galleries are just very high-end galleries. Like, there's a lot of high-end galleries there. That are like the galleries that would show the work that's the scene that I am part of, which you're part of, which Helium Cowboy is part of, are showing like Wes Lang or Todd James and that, you know, like a little bit extra on the level bar, you know. So
there's a lot of galleries in Copenhagen that do like the big fairs and all on that high.
So a lot of them are doing big fairs.
And it's also like there's two art fairs in Copenhagen, you know.
There used to be one, and then it split up to two, and then it split up to three, and then one closed down, and I don't know, like it's. Yeah.
But the Chart, is it called Chart?
Chart, that
sounds like a good idea. I mean, I've just seen it from the internet from this perspective.
Yeah, and that's really high end, mm-hmm. like that's really high end artwork that's there, and I think, you know, like the galleries that are in that fair are really strong, and like. It's almost like going to, I wouldn't call it a museum, but a lot of the pieces there are museum pieces that could end up in museums, and artists that have shown in museums. So
when will you end up in a museum? Ending up in a museum is a very negative way of saying it.
Kind of sort of. It sounds like you're like, oh, God damn it, I died. Yeah, I don't know if that will ever happen, but I don't really have a goal. It's not like...
Is it important to you?
No.
Is it important what, you know, so like I think art for many people is like also striving for, you know, immortality, but is that something that's important to you? What happens?
No, the important thing is just waking up and smiling, I guess, and being happy with what I do, mm-hmm. and then being able to live semi-carefree, mm-hmm. because I don't think you will ever be 100% carefree when you're working with your own product that's just yourself, like as an artist. It's like you always be. I saw this interview with the artist Kaws, KWS, which is essentially he's like the top dog of urban contemporary, mm-hmm. new contemporary, whatever you want to call it. He's up there, right? Yeah. And I seen this interview and I was like, man, that guy has it made. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, he still felt like, you know, like still got to push it. You know, I haven't reached my goal yet. I'm like, what? It never ends. You know, like it'll never end.
Yeah, but that's also, I mean, he's just reached probably goals in terms of recognition that cannot grow bigger and sales. No. I mean,
of course, that's a so then there's a new worry on top of that, you know. Yeah, so I think, you know, like if you can just, if I'm able to live how I'm living right now, which is very comfortable, mm-hmm. but I'm by no means rich, I don't own a car or anything, mm-hmm. The rest of my life, and have good relationships, mm-hmm. through the art and good communities and good experiences, I think that's what I want to do. I don't really care about the other things so much. Like, that would be nice. Like, I'm not saying, if a museum called me tomorrow, like, oh, we'd like to buy a big piece of you, like, or something. Like, I'm like not gonna be like, that's not me.
Also, in Europe, it's a little bit more difficult to get into museums. Like in America, I mean, a lot of the artists that we work with, even in the beginning of their careers, they had their works in museums, but it's a different kind of structure.
It's a very different kind of structure.
Museums. Yeah. A lot of them are privately funded. Most of them are privately funded.
Yes. That's different. So, yeah. But I think just
so a museum is not important for us.
Not at all.
So is there anything important that you think we left out? I mean, it's, you know, I would just, you know, try to to stick to the hour, because there's like 15 hours that we can talk more, but
yeah, I can continue this for a long time.
Well, we can continue afterwards, but
yeah.
People will start to fall asleep, you know?
I think one thing that I learned over the last maybe year, and I think that that's from that like exhibition hangover that we talked about, is branching out. Mm-hmm. I think that I was too focused mm-hmm. on just painting white squares of cotton canvas or paper. And I think that I learned that getting out of your studio is important. Mm-hmm. I think doing a show like this yeah. is fun. It's a new project.
Yeah.
For me, I started doing murals again. I came from painting on the streets, and now I'm trying to go back to doing that. I'm doing my first really big mural this summer, like in a month. And I'm very excited about that. I'm doing a street art festival.
Where's that?
In Denmark. Denmark, yeah. Actually, in my hometown, through Peter Birk.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So I'm doing that and with a lift and everything, and I'm super excited. And then we're doing a street art festival. And then I actually did this, which was very nice for me. I did this workshop for a bunch of kids from a school in lower social income mm-hmm. area. And that was awesome. That was the first time I ever done that. And it just gave me so much energy. So I think, I think I need to maybe branch out a little bit more, do mm-hmm. little projects. Like, I know you've done beer. Not drinking beer, also done that, but you designed beer. You brew your own beer. It's like, I think, if you just go to your studio 10 hours a day and paint and paint and paint and paint. I did that for 4 years, mm-hmm. every day, all the time, no breaks. Yeah. That became a little bit much. And I think that was part of the big crash, or whatever you can call it. So I think that, like, just doing a little bit more fun projects here and there. Like, I would love to do more murals and little projects with kids, or designing a beer label thing, or doing a t-shirt, or I don't know. But just a little bit more to get that inspiration and energy from other people, because it is a little bit lonely every now and then, right? Like, just being in your studio, listening to jazz 1,000 hours a month.
Jazz and blues.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Good inspiration. The last series I've did, I just listening to, really, without any compromise, I was just listening to a certain kind of jazz from a certain time period.
Yeah, which is?
Charlie Parker and the Coltrane's
bebop times,
stuff like that. Yeah, but just
So good.
Yeah,
so good. And like Blue Train, the album for Coltrane after Miles Davis, after he broke up with him.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah, also the stories behind it.
One of my favorite. Yeah. Yeah, I have this a
crazy time too.
So crazy, and all of them were insane and died in crazy houses or of drugs. Yeah, I listened to this podcast and I kept listening to it over and over again. And it's the history of jazz by this, I can't remember the name of him, but he's like a Danish guy that just knows everything about it. And it was amazing. And I just, me and Julian Dice, which is also part of the show, we share a studio, and we just kept listening to it and listening to it. It's in Danish, yeah. Okay. It's absolutely amazing. It just tells all the crazy stories about like how Billie Holiday was crazy, and this person, something about like Charlie Parker died laughing on a couch.
Yeah.
Like, they were insane. Like, yeah. I find big inspiration in jazz as well.
Yeah. Yeah, music in general.
Yeah, 100%. We had that time with C.W. Stone King, you and I, when we were...
I still have that.
Yeah. So, I started listening to him again, but I definitely needed him on a break for about 6 months, because I was like, I just listened to it over and over and over.
I did, one of the, probably the, for me, the major piece of my solo exhibition last year with Victor Castillo together, that was inspired by one of his songs, totally.
Which one was that again?
The Love Me or Die.
And
I played it, all the time on the guitar here, because it's a very long text and it's not that easy, but it's, I don't mind, I don't care how it sounds, but it's just like that, I couldn't let go of that song and of that story.
But
and,
he's amazing.
Yeah, and you wouldn't believe, talking about beer, Ollie and I, we're creating a new artist beer together.
Nice.
And already since we wanted to do that last year, but then there was no time. But the title for that beer, and basically the story of the beer, is the Love Me or Die. So sometimes you gotta send CW Stoking really hooked on these things. But I also think I dive into those things and I start researching. And that's a very important aspect of my work before I, so in my sketching phase is a lot of writing, a lot of researching, and then I come from one thing to the other. Like the work for this show, The Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, it's such a fantastic story of a crazy movie from the 50s, and it has so much relevance for today and all these things.
It reminds me of those like the big dinosaurs that are attacking New York, or like
King Kong.
Yeah,
but this time it's a 50-foot woman.
Yeah.
What's scarier, a dinosaur or a 50-foot woman?
I'm not sure. 50-foot woman, maybe.
Well, that
how much is 50 feet?
20 meters, I think.
20. Yeah, that's a big woman.
Yeah, that's a big woman.
Isn't there like a fetish about that kind of stuff?
I don't know. Probably it wasn't the
50s. Giant women.
I don't know.
So something about that? No.
All right, that's when we do the sex podcast next week.
Yeah, because I see that horror shock. Like it reminds me of like some kind of
Well, actually, the work has to come with the trailer for the movie from 1958 because that basically explains it all.
Okay, nice.
So, but that's what I mean.
You should maybe do a little like a little flat screen underneath that just runs the trailer all the time. But then you got to start paying money to the business and stuff, don't you? Like
I don't know. Maybe it's too old for that. But I don't. That's part of research I don't like to do.
Yeah. But I know you really nerd things.
Yeah.
Like you really go dig in deep to them, don't you?
Yeah.
It's like I like that you brewed your own beer. Like.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah, I like. I still have a couple of. I saved a couple of bottles.
Yeah. That's actually a good point. It's 6 o'clock in the evening now. Julia's tired. Her arms are weak from carrying the camera around us and trying to make us look good all evening.
My beer's empty,
so we should probably just call it a podcast.
Yeah,
and see what's in the fridge.
That's awesome.
It's definitely
I enjoyed it.
Still, definitely a dirty hands in there.
Yeah, really nice. Nice. Well, I enjoyed this. Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah,
this was hilarious.
Thank you. You know,
and, awesome.
Let's see how we hang the show tomorrow. It's going to be very interesting.
I hope it's going to be awesome.
Tons of great work.
Yeah, we still got more coming, don't we?
Yeah, just two works, but.
Yeah, nice. I'm excited. Thank you, guys.